Before I start, let me say the people on the, in the outer sections may want to move into the inner. There's lots of seats, just so you can see the screen better. We'll be showing photographs and a video from the trip. So, and you can start it up. So, if you have, okay. I'll let people get settled here for a second. Okay. So the Grand Canyon of the Colorado River is in Arizona. It is 277 river miles long. For the first 226 miles from Lee's Ferry to Diamond Creek, there is no road access. There are also no motels, no restaurants, and no cell phone service. A third of the way through, there is one small store at Phantom Ranch where one can enjoy a glass of lemonade, buy a T-shirt, mail a postcard, make a phone call on a single working payphone, and use a flush toilet while watching a scorpion crawl across the tiles. Nowhere else in this 226 miles is there a modern building, electricity, or water that comes out of a pipe. But there is beautiful scenery, secret gardens, and over 93 named whitewater rapids that attract river runners from around the world. Some of these rapids can stand an 18-foot boat on end. As such, usage is carefully regulated by the U.S. Park Service. In March of this year, I joined Gordon and Tamara Hamilton on a rafting trip through the Grand Canyon. And Gordon was the trip leader. So I'm going to turn it over to him for a little bit.
First, I wanted to share a joy and sorrow. I would have brought it up earlier, but I thought I'd have this opportunity where I have the podium. And that is that at the end of this trip, we had no injuries, we had no serious medical emergencies, and when we came home, we found that the life was much as we had left it. Our families were healthy. In the big scheme of things, 3 weeks is not a long time, but it was a gigantic joy to return. These days, to get a Grand Canyon private permit, you can get them through a lottery with the National Park Service. But my permit came from the old system, which was a waiting list with about 10,000 people on it. I had gotten on the waiting list in 2002, and by 98, and by 2002, I was down to number 3,998 on that waiting list. That allowed me to call in on a Wednesday morning. They had days of the week to get a released permit. The Park Service had just figured out that private rafters would be willing to go in the winter, whereas commercial folks really only want the high season. So they'd opened up some new dates and the one we got was March 21st of 2005. I ended up deferring that trip for 3 years under their system, and that's how we ended up on March 21st, 2008. This was my fourth trip down the Grand Canyon and my first one as the permit holder. You know, even though it was a fourth trip, there's no doubt in my mind that every trip in the canyon is a once-in-a-lifetime event. They're not the same. Everyone's different. Tamara and I have been running rivers since about 1984, and most of these trips were just a few days in length. In 1996, we were invited on a trip, and that 18-day trip defined the entire year for us. The length and magnitude of the Grand Canyon trips really set them apart from other river trips. With 16 to 21 days as the length of the trip, it's really critical that you've got a good group of people to go with, because you're going to be really close to these people for a lot of days. That you've got to have good group dynamics. I was hoping to be able to get my sisters to come along. And unfortunately, Laura's got horses that she couldn't get away from, and Elaine has sled dogs she can't get away from. But I was able to find a couple of my, three of my non-rafting nieces and nephews, and they did join the trip. Lyndon I ran into at the ski swap. Invited him, and about 3 or 4 days later, he was ready to go. We rented all of our major equipment for this trip. I've been on trips where we took our own equipment, but with people coming from 6 different states and almost half the people on the trip being rookies, that didn't make much sense. So we rented our equipment and also had our meals catered and packed and coolers, and worked out very well. We ate we really did. I actually gained weight. As expeditions go, putting together a Grand Canyon trip is not that hard. After all, there's thousands of people that do this every year. And even so, knowing that if you have an oversight, you're going to live with it for 21 days does make it very stressful. And the other thing I wanted to touch on, every trip I've been on, everybody has to be at Lee's Ferry at a certain time. And there's always something that you just couldn't imagine. We've had people have to buy pickup trucks in Beaver, Utah, so that they could get there. In this particular case, we had somebody lose all their luggage, and it didn't arrive until midnight, night before we launched. But we had figured out a way that we were going to. They went to a Walmart actually and outfitted themselves for the trip. But there are no Walmarts in the canyon. There is a moment on a trip like this that is really truly amazing, and that's when you push away from the shore into the river. And at that point, the weight of the preparations, all the planning, just lifts right off your shoulder. You know at that point that if you left the coffee pot plugged in, or you forgot a spatula, or you did something even more serious, it just doesn't matter. You're with the river now, and you're headed downstream.
So I was born and raised in Arizona, and as a younger, lighter man, I backpacked hundreds of miles in the Grand Canyon. My first serious river rafting trips occurred in 1984 on different rivers. And my first Grand Canyon rafting experience was in 1991. The following year, on my permit, I was the trip leader, and Kathy, my girlfriend, joined me. When I flipped our raft in the very first major rapid, and she came up smiling, I knew we were destined for greater adventures. Anyway, that trip was the last time I was actually in the Grand Canyon until this year. I love the canyon country of southern Utah and northern Arizona, and I do miss it. I love getting away from the urban, industrialized world, but it's often hard to do. Edward Abbey, an author who adopted the Southwest as his home, he was actually from Hoboken, New Jersey, wrote, "Shut off from the natural world and sealed up, encapsulated in a box of artificial light and tyrannical noise, only man, chained by his self-imposed slavery to the clock, denies the elemental fire and proceeds as best he can about his business, suffering quietly, a martyr to his madness." In metaphysics, this is Edward Abbey continued. In metaphysics, the notion that earth and all that's on it is a mental construct is the product of people who spend their lives inside rooms. It is an indoor philosophy. The world is older and bigger than we are. This is a hard truth for some folks to swallow. When Gordon asked me to join him, I was in the midst of some very difficult times at HP. My department was understaffed. I was overworked, tired, and frustrated. Because of work, I was giving up things I liked to do. I needed saving. And as David Brower said, there are many ways to salvation, and one of them is to follow a river. Gordon's invitation felt a bit like a lifeline, or like he'd thrown me a rescue rope. The dates were right. It would be about the time that my HP projects that were consuming my time were completed. But although part of me wanted desperately to say yes, I was apprehensive about being away from my family for 3 weeks, something I'd never done before. I had no qualms about leaving HP for 3 weeks. I was also anxious about joining a group of people I did not know. Many good friends find they can't get along when stuck together for a week, let alone 3 weeks. I'd be with 11 people I'd never met before. And that is significant. I was worried about the people I'd miss and the people I'd be with. I harbored little concern about the whitewater or the other potential hardships of the trip. Anyway, Kathy and I discussed it, and although it would be difficult for her, managing our two girls for 3 weeks all by herself, Kathy encouraged me to go, to restore my sanity and to practice for our family trip on my permit in 2011. I decided to take the risk, and I told Gordon yes. My spirits rose almost immediately. I had something substantial to look forward to. And 4 months later in Marble Canyon, the start of the Grand Canyon, I felt like I was home again.
I've got to say, the Grand Canyon is not about the whitewater. There are some great rapids, as he mentioned, 90, close to 100 named ones. But for 21 days, that's not enough for a whitewater enthusiast. I know people have gone for the whitewater and been disappointed. But the canyon is a spectacularly beautiful place. There are grottos, waterfalls, and everywhere you go, there's history. There's a spiritual feeling that also grabs you about being in a giant cathedral, being surrounded by the walls down in the basement of the earth. For me, one of the things that happens, having some science background, I guess, is physics start becoming transparent to me. And it may be the reflections of the river or the way that the light bounces around in the canyon. As the day goes on, the shades of the light, the reds, the blues, they all change. The place becomes very transparent. It becomes like that you can physically understand that there is more space in the atom than there is solids. And things, it seems to me, like the walls become like the water. There's something you always have to keep in mind. We're not welcome there. We're far too delicate for the canyon. Everything in the canyon, from the red ants to the cactus, has weapons that they're ready to deploy. The ravens, they'll steal your food. The rocks will take your skin off. But once you're in the canyon, somehow adults start playing like children. In the beginning, nobody in this group knew everyone in the group. And there was at least one person who didn't know anybody. Somebody we invited on the spur of the moment without knowing at all, who expressed that she really wanted to go. And at the moment, that seemed like enough. And it was. She was great. But people open up on these trips, and they get to know each other in a way that I've only seen on Grand Canyon trips. Because what happens is you really become a tribe. In the 21 days, you see a few other small groups, and you start to believe that the world is a very, very small place in the bottom of a gorge, and you are a tribe. Another observation I've made is typically the entire time, 21 days, you may not see yourself in a mirror. And that kind of releases you, I think. You get to know people in a unique way on a trip like this.
Mark Twain, in The Adventures of in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, wrote, "We said there weren't no home like a raft after all. Other places do seem so cramped up and smothery, but a raft don't. You feel mighty free and easy and comfortable on a raft. It's lovely to live on a raft. We had the sky up there all speckled with stars, and we used to lay on our backs and look up at them and discuss about whether they was made or only just happened." Who here believes that for 18 out of 20 evenings they could be content sitting and watching the sky for entertainment? Anybody? Well, quite a few, actually. Well, that's what we mostly did in the evenings, punctuated by quiet conversations, harmonica and guitar, and a few songs. Mostly we stared in awe at the starlight that was a few years old to millions of years old. We identified constellations that had been viewed and named by ancient Greeks. We identified planets named for Roman gods centuries ago. We watched man-made satellites suspended in orbit a few miles up traverse the sky, sometimes brighter than the brightest star and other times barely visible. And we enjoyed seeing the fleeting and sometimes spectacular shooting stars, meteors, that we saw every single night. I marvel at the history I'm exposed to in the Grand Canyon. The canyon was formed during the past 17 million years when earth movements and water cut gashes through 2 billion years of geology. That's how old the rocks are in the inner gorge. Some of the youngest rocks of the journey occur at the put-in, where the sandstone is roughly 200 million years old. But the youngest rocks are geologic babies, half-million-year-old lava flows in the lower canyon. Henry David Thoreau, a Unitarian forebear of ours, said, "The finest workers in stone are not copper or steel tools, but the gentle touches of air and water working at their leisure with a liberal allowance of time." Nowhere is this more apparent than in the dark depths of the Grand Canyon, looking up at the rims a mile above. On a more recent time scale, we stopped at ancient Indian sites, granaries to store corn built high up in the canyon walls, pictures chipped into the rock, areas littered with broken pottery, and remains of stone buildings abandoned 600 years ago. We viewed the remains left by explorers, miners, ranchers, and boatmen during the past 150 years. Each of these provided a diversion, and often a Where's Waldo type of search, for there are no signs guiding you to these artifacts. Often you feel as if you are the first to discover the hidden secrets of the canyon, both the man-made ones and the natural ones of rock, water, light, plants, and animals. And of course, there is the river, the miles of calm, serene, floating, punctuated by anxious scouting of difficult rapids and followed by the thrill of running whitewater. We'll share this via video. That's me at the oars, in case you wondered. This is Gordon at the oars. That was the easy way.
Vulcan's Anvil, and it's a very nice quiet stretch of water right above lava. A lot of people kiss the rock for luck. They used to leave pennies. Somebody figured out that's littering, no matter how you cut it.
So in case people couldn't hear, so this is called Vulcan's Anvil. It is a big basalt rock above Lava Falls, which is the biggest rapid in the Grand Canyon. It's like kissing the Blarney Stone. You kiss it for luck. And here's Lava Falls. There are no sneaks. They were not in our group. Make do with what you got. Finally, the end of the trip approached. Diamond Peak, near the lake, near the takeout, was in view our final night on the river. Approaching the end was bittersweet. We'd had a marvelous journey. Everybody got along. None of our boats flipped. Nobody swam unintentionally. And there were no serious injuries. I looked forward to wishing Kathy a happy birthday as soon as we found cell phone service. And I longed to return home to Kathy and my daughters, but I also regretted not being able to continue down the river for a few more days to the end of the canyon. The Diamond Creek takeout exposed us to the mad rush of civilization again. We had to unload the rafts, clear the beach, and deflate the rafts as quickly as possible to make room for the next boaters taking out. Then we had to load everything on a truck and catch the bus back to civilization. And that bus was on a very tight schedule. On the road, we covered distance in an hour that we would have had floated in a whole day or more. In Peach Springs on the Hualapai Indian Reservation, I again used a flush toilet for the second time in 3 weeks. And I was amazed how dirty the water got when I washed my hands, arms, and face in a sink. But I felt fine. I felt different than I had 3.5 weeks earlier. I felt relaxed, content, and at peace. I still felt this way even after driving into Las Vegas. I was surprised, however, to find, when I picked up a newspaper, that the world had not changed while I was away. I felt as though I had expected the world to be healed, as I was. But war, famine, injustice, dubya, and discrimination were still present. However, this too will change. As Winnie the Pooh said, rivers know this. There is no hurry. We shall get there someday. Thank you.